ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
एवं गृहेषु
सक्तानां
प्रमत्तानां तदीहया अत्यक्रामद् अभिज्ञातः कालपरमदुस्तरः एवं गृहेषु सक्तानां प्रमत्तानां तदीहया अत्यक्रामद् अभिज्ञातः कालपरमदुस्तरः एवं दस् Kaheshu, in the family affairs, Saktanam, of persons who are too attached, Paramatanam, insanely attached, Tadihaya, engrossed in such thoughts, Atyakramat surpassed. Avigyataha
imperceptibly.
Kalaha eternal time. Parama
supremely.
Dustaraha
insurmountable.
Translation. Insurmountable, eternal time, imperceptibly overcomes those who are too much attached to family affairs and are always engrossed in their thought. I'll just comment something before I read the purport. I'm very familiar with this chapter. This particular verse is a summary verse that introduces the theme of the next 10-15 verses. So, what Prabhupada expresses in the purport will be carried out in the verses and the purports coming. So it's good to capture the essence of the theme here. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Quote, I am now happy. I have everything in order. My bank balance is quite enough. I can now give my children enough estate. I am now successful. The poor beggar sannyasis depend on God, but they come to beg from me. Therefore, I am more than the Supreme God. Unquote. These are some of the thoughts which engross the insanely attached householder who is blind to the passing of eternal time. Our duration of life is measured, and no one is able to enhance it even by a second against the scheduled time ordained by the Supreme Will. Such valuable time, especially for the human being, should be cautiously spent, because even a second passed away imperceptibly cannot be replaced, even in exchange for thousands of gold coins amassed by hard labor. Every second of human life is meant for making an ultimate solution to the problems of life, namely, repetition of birth and death, and revolving in the cycle of 8,400,000 different species of life. The material body, which is subject to birth and death, diseases, and old age, is the cause of all sufferings of the living being. Otherwise, the living being is eternal. He is never born, nor does he ever die. Foolish persons forget this problem. They do not know at all how to solve the problems of life, but become engrossed in temporary family affairs, not knowing that eternal time is passing away imperceptibly, and that their measured duration of life is diminishing every second. Without any solution to the big problem, namely repetition of birth and death, disease and old age. This is called illusion. And the second paragraph begins, but such illusion cannot work on one who is awake in the devotional service of the Lord. Yudhisthira Maharaj and his brothers, the Pandavas, were all engaged in the service of the Lord Shri Krishna. And they had very little attraction for the illusory happiness of this material world. As we have discussed previously, Maharaj Yudhisthira was fixed in the service of Lord Mukunda, parentheses, the Lord who can award salvation. And therefore he had no attraction for even such comforts of life as are available in the kingdom of heaven, because even the happiness obtained on the planet Brahmaloka is also temporary and illusory. Because the living being is eternal, he can be happy only in the eternal abode of the kingdom of God, Paravyom, from which no one returns to this region of repeated birth and death, disease and old age. Therefore, any comfort of life or any material happiness which does not warrant an eternal life is but illusion for the eternal living being. One who understands this factually is learned, and such a learned person can sacrifice any amount of material happiness to achieve the desired goal known as Brahma Sukham, or absolute happiness. Real transcendentalists are hungry for this happiness, as a hungry man cannot be made happy by all comforts of life minus foodstuff. So the hungry man, the man hungry for eternal absolute happiness, cannot be satisfied by any amount of material happiness. Therefore, the instruction described in this verse cannot be applied to Maharaj Yudhisthira or his brothers and mother. It was meant for persons like Dhritarashtra, for whom Vidura came especially to impart lessons. Get out of here! Immediately! That's the next verse. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you. This is the message there. One of the core messages of the chapter. Insurmountable eternal time. Kala parama dustaraha imperceptibly overcomes those who are too much attached. Imperceptibly is avigyataha. Kala parama dustaraha avigyataha imperceptibly surpasses achakramad. Steps beyond. The time goes beyond this type of person. Which type of person? Graheshu saktanam pramatanam tadihaya. imperceptible eternal time, excuse me, unsurmountable eternal time imperceptibly overcomes those who are too much attached to family affairs and are engrossed in their thought. Putting aside the abominable behaviors of Dhritarashtra, you know, the good and evil theme, here is the attached and the detached. And what happens to the attached, what happens to the detached? So that by understanding one, it helps understand the other, and vice versa. By appreciating the dilemma of the attached, the glory of the unattached becomes more clear. The glory of one who is unattached makes the contrast of those who are attached more clear. So, Vyas has decided to speak about the attached, and the chapters about the attached, Dhritarashtra. Attached on the platform of the body. Identification with the body, attachment on the platform of the body, thoughts go on the platform of the body, consciousness becomes absorbed on the platform of the body, and all things that are related to the body are all temporal matters, like the discussion, short discussion last night about acting from the soul or acting from the heart. Those who are attached, that capacity is eroded or stolen away, and instead, one's thoughts go to the body or the subtle body, body gross or subtle, and then the happiness or distress connected to the gross or subtle body. And one's consciousness is absorbed in illusion. And that's the situation with Dhritarashtra. Or we can say Dhritarashtra-like personalities. But so Dhritarashtra, in the conception of this body, he was thinking, I should be king. I'm the firstborn, but because this bodily defect, I'm blind, I can't be king, but I want to be king. And because he was unable to be king, then the wish that his sons could be king, and then at least vicariously he could experience being the king through the kingship of his sons. So he was attached. Here, too much attached to family affairs. One of the pieces of advice, once a crow was visiting Hastinapur and on Krishna's request and was assessing the situation, and he could understand very clearly, because he was a very wise minister, what the conflict was between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And yes, it was Duryodhan, but it was the king, because the king had the capacity, at least in his role as king, to make necessary adjustments. It doesn't mean that therefore Duryodhan would become a nice guy, but at least the situation would be properly addressed. And that's the duty of the king. But the king couldn't do that, because he was on the platform of the body. So Akura, before parting back to Dwaraka, advised him, Dhritarashtra, your whole program is on the platform of the body. You're thinking, my sons. But who are these? What is this relationship, my sons? After this life, are they going to be your sons? Before this life, were they your sons? Is that the real identity? They are your sons? That's illusion. But you're basing your actions based upon illusion. My sons should become king, because I, therefore, mine. If the conception of I is on the platform of the body, conception of mine is on the platform of the body, and higher principle gets lost, what to speak of the soul? Principles of religion get lost, that which is more enduring than the body or the mind, that which has lasting value or principles to live one's life by, what to speak of the soul itself. Those things get lost. And then one acts contrary to religion, and that erodes whatever strength of piety and virtue that one has. It's taken away by one's own misdirection of the conception of self in terms of the body. So, when that conception of self as the body is firmly in place, as with Dhritarashtra, one thing for sure is that time doesn't stop. And time, this kala, parama dustaraha, supremely unsurmountable, dustaraha, parama dustaraha, supremely unsurmountable, time continues. The seconds tick by, the minutes tick by, the hours tick by, the time ticks by, and life is taken away. That which one is the source of happiness, or at least the plan for happiness, by this body and things connected to the body, it's all taken away. One's plans, all of these things that they're characteristic of the demoniac mentality. I have everything in order, my bank balance is quite enough, I can now give my children enough estate, I'm now successful. The poor beggar sannyasi depends on God, but they come and beg for me. I've had direct experience with persons who think like this. And this is attachment on the platform of the body. The householder that has some wealth is also dependent upon God for their wealth. And the sannyasi that is dependent upon God for his wealth is dependent upon God for his wealth. And their calling in life is different, just as the head department of the body and the arm and belly departments of the body are different, although they're all parts of the same body. Anyway, so the mentality of illusion is to think in terms of only the temporary, thus losing the eternal soul. Prabhupada would quote sometimes the biblical saying, what profiteth a man if he gains the whole world and loses his immortal soul? How much illusion can you stack up and equal one fraction of eternal happiness? How many images in a mirror does it take to make the real object that the images are the reflection of? You can't get any number of reflections in a mirror to be the equal to the object that it's a reflection of. So the theme here is those that are attached, Prabhupada writes, insanely attached, insane because it's insanity or craziness is accepting oneself to be what one is not. And the attachment is so strong that it's insane. That is, one is very forcefully, powerfully, full steam ahead, going away from one's real happiness in order to find real happiness. And convinced, this is real happiness and the other is foolish. Why waste your time and lose what is really real happiness in life? Like, what do you guys do for fun? Because happiness or fun is on the platform of the body. And all the other things, you know, honor, distinction, recognition, praise, success, accomplishment, achievement, winning. I'm amazed that the whole of America is completely caught up in this basketball tournament. I mean, the old lady sitting next to me had to come in on a wheelchair. That's all she could talk about is her grandchildren and the basketball tournament and the weather. So it's not to say that such persons don't have a clue about the eternal soul, but that their consciousness is not there. And what happens imperceptibly is we know it's happening, but we can't see it happening. Time is taking away. Time destroys all things. So time is taking away that which is one's happiness. So it's actually never there, but even the expectation that can possibly be enjoyed, it's taken away also. Somebody commented like that. Another wheelchair guy a few aisles ahead, he was trying to get his bag out of the thing up top and people were watching and someone helped him and he said, you know, it's just, they sat down and said, I can't do this anymore. My happiness has been taken away. My youth is taken away. Now, what to do? So one should, while that inevitable birth, death, disease, and old age thing is going on, one should be very carefully, painstakingly, meticulously cultivating the real happiness, the eternal asset of a living being, the position of eternal life. Those that are too much attached don't do that. So all they have is everything is imperceptibly being taken away by time. It's a setup for getting smashed. Absolutely certain. Like full steam ahead, heading for a wall and thinking it's not going to happen. And then it's the splatter and then grief, but the anticipation of happiness keeps one going because there isn't any knowledge of any other shelter. It's actually very unfortunate And as the next verse says, very fearful. Very fearful. So you try to block out the fearful by just more sense gratification. So then the flip side is, someone may argue, well, that's true for the spiritualists too. They're also getting older and dying, and those, you know, the body deteriorates. Of course, this comes again in the second canto, where the same idea, each day that passes is stealing away the vitality of the conditioned soul. But for the transcendentalist, each day that passes, they're that much closer to the eternal goal of life, provided the transcendentalist is properly cultivating that spiritual conception and acting in relationship with the eternal goal of life. Each day that passes, they're closer. Yes, the body gets old and deteriorates. That's a given. And that's one of the things that the transcendentalist understands. Therefore, let me not invest my expectation for happiness in that birth, death, disease, and old age program. I'll manage it in a reasonable and responsible way, give my full attention otherwise to transcendental life. Prabhupada uses the word in the verse, or in the purport, paravyom. Happiness comes in the spiritual sky. So let me cultivate and aspire to achieve that end. Prabhupada remarks, one, a transcendentalist is very eager for that spiritual happiness. They're very eager for the acting in harmony with that which is eternal. There's a happiness that goes with that. They're eager for that happiness. It's natural for the soul. It's not selfishness. It's natural for the soul. That the happiness of the soul in devotion is the happiness of Krishna. And when one connects with the happiness of Krishna, the natural happiness of the soul is achieved. So in devotional life, to be eager for transcendental happiness, when things are properly ordered, it's seeking the happiness of Krishna. That's one's real happiness. One is eager for the happiness of Krishna, then each day that passes, even as the body deteriorates and whatever else happens due to the passage of time, it's just further confirmation that we're the right decision. My decision to invest consciousness in that which is eternal was the right decision. Just see how this stuff is. One of Prabhupada's secretaries once described Prabhupada held his arm up, turned his arm around and said, "This body is becoming useless." Like you might look at a dish rag or something and say, you know. Very detached, you know, not lamenting. "Oh, my youth is gone. I can't enjoy like I did before." But understanding with detachment. Now, detachment doesn't mean neglect or don't maintain, but it means, detachment means not looking with the expectation for happiness in that something. If one, like we're hearing in relation to Ram, that the whole idea of giving up the kingdom, his point is, what's the use of the kingdom if it's not with the happiness of my father? What's the use of having the whole kingdom? What's the use? If we depart from, there are different things were said at different times, but if we depart from truth and I regain the kingdom, Where's the happiness? So there's a different standard of happiness for a virtuous person and for a transcendentalist. And that happiness that's on the spiritual side is undying. It's not dependent upon the passing phases of time in the body. Undying happiness. A transcendentalist recognizes that. So they're very eager. This is another very important theme in the Bhagavatam. Not just in the mind accepting, yes, there's a soul, yes, there's God. Going further, an eagerness for acting in relationship with God from the platform of the soul. A transcendentalist has that eagerness, and that eagerness just displaces the harassing features of the material energy. Like, oh, body's getting useless. And with the uselessness, the absence of material pleasure, and the increase, perhaps, of material pain. This body is becoming useless. Contentment can remain in that condition if there is this internal happiness. Because that's real contentment. Happiness is not dependent upon something external, temporal. Ever-changing. One of the earliest instructions in Bhagavad Gita, this nasate vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha, becoming attached on the platform of the soul. Not taking so very seriously the things that are asat. And that's this world. It's so I'll, with care and responsible action, I'll take care of the duties of life. Particularly those duties that are in relation to other Vaishnavas, to cultivate proper exchanges, loving exchanges with other Vaishnavas. Because that's also not temporal, that's eternal. And other souls that may not have access to Krishna's lotus feet, to create situations where those souls can have access to Krishna's lotus feet. That's the internal happiness of the soul in service to Krishna. And then the outcome of that endeavor is entirely up to Krishna. So saying, Vidura has come back. He gave association to Dhritarashtra because he wants the soul of Dhritarashtra to not plummet down to hell and suffer for all of his misdeeds. He wants the soul of Dhritarashtra to become elevated instead. And so he's making a special mercy mission. And what this verse is describing is at the heart of his message. Too much attached. All good qualities will be robbed, the vitality of life will be robbed, the real mission of life will be robbed, and thoughts will be altogether, because of that misidentification, absorbed. Thoughts will be absorbed on the platform of the body. So your destination will be downwards. Please don't do that. My dear King, please get out of here immediately. Get out of material consciousness, and then you can get out of your material situation. Okay. Any discussion?
In lecture in July and spoke very strongly about Vyasa Dharmas at some point in the future, realized that he has to be family life. And
Prabhupada taught like that.
Yeah. In the Grihastha Ashramayana, and I think I've read this book as well, it said that if one's family life is Krishna conscious, all the family members are Krishna conscious, one need not leave family situation.
That's in the Grihastha Manual.
Do you remember?
Leaving family life means entering the vanaprastha ashram. It doesn't mean leaving wife. It means leaving the comforts and all the paraphernalia and the attachments and all the stuff that goes with family life. Leaving that situation, commonly with wife, going to places of pilgrimage or going to the forest, or says, you know, this duty of life is done, putting on a ribbon and a bow, I've done my service, move on. That's for the sake of just like kings, like, yeah, they would complete their duties, turn the kingdom over to their son, and go to the forest. So had it nothing to do with whether their family was Krishna conscious or not, it had everything to do with what their duty is. Great kings did like that. Not only those that were attached did like that. So I don't know where that expression comes from, the Grihastha Manual that you're referring to.
I think I even read it someplace else besides that. So the copy has it right.
Well, I'm giving you my comment and response. No, practically speaking, the execution of that is not abundant. It doesn't change what the mandate is. Something that seems to apply is this, and that is the strictness of adhering to the varna and ashram duties is particularly relevant for those that are not advanced in Krishna consciousness, not advanced in spiritual realization. Meaning that the Varnashram institution is to help religiously and gradually elevate persons to the platform of Krishna consciousness or the platform of devotional service. And it does make sense that if one is situated strongly in Krishna consciousness, in devotional service, the converse is also the strictness of those regulations does not apply in the same way. Or say the same thing with for example, Prabhupada taught that if the details of what are the duties of a grihastha are so voluminous that one would hardly even begin one day just taking care of all of what the duties of a grihastha are. Just, you know, before you get your day gets started, you're just doing duties of a grihastha. So the adjustment is that therefore devotional service supersedes the requirement to perform so many duties, because the purpose of those duties is already accomplished. The purpose of those duties is to bring one to the stage of devotional service. One is engaged in devotional service. Those same duties, now the fruit of them is achieved, the duties are no longer required. In their, you know, detailed and literal execution. So something like that kind of logic might be said, you know, the strictness of one must do this and one must do that, ashram specific, does not apply with the same strength when one is very fixed in Krishna consciousness. And so, the application of that principle that at some stage of life the grihastha should be prepared to leave behind minimally, the material comforts of family life, and just simply for the rest of one's life, and then going back and doting on children and grandchildren and all the rest. Like a nice example that comes to mind is Tamahar and Montreaty. We've met them. So their children are now grown up and they have grandchildren. And Tamahar was sharing with me, he said, it's like getting attached all over again with the grandchildren. And he was sharing that I can see the reason why detachment from family life at a certain stage of life, because it's so easy to get more attached and stay attached. But it's not like, therefore, Tamahar, you should, live somewhere else. Don't live where your grandchildren are or your children are that are. But that's not where he's investing his shelter and consciousness. He's investing his shelter and consciousness in service. And it's a conscious choice. He could consciously choose something else. So it's not, I don't consider it to be a violation of that injunction the Prabhupada gave. Rather, he's in a very, he gave up his career position. He was dean of a college, earning, far much more money than he's now receiving, like less than half of what he was receiving. And with that, it's just to get by so that he can full-time do service. So that's a renounced position. Mixed in with, being a grandfather. And, recognizing that has its compromises. And then he had some cancer surgery, so he knows, I got a new lease on life, I better use the time that I have in a very focused way. Not doting on the temporal, but serving Krishna. There's a practical example of a very Krishna conscious person that has not gone to the forest or simply gone on pilgrimage. The purpose of that pilgrimage is detachment, and the purpose of detachment is to allow one to become more attached to the Supreme, and through attachment to the Supreme through devotional service, that detachment is accomplished. But he sees himself as at a very taking that which he gathered in the course of his career training and fully using it in service to the mission of his spiritual master. So I would just end by saying the principle is to be applied case specific. You can think of some other examples where there's families that don't have children, and so the idea of continuing to give protection to the wife is the duty of the husband, not because where is the wife going to be provided with shelter? But that's dutiful, it's not due to attachment. Then it's incumbent upon that person to see that there's a progressive deeper and deeper total immersion in devotional service for both the husband and the wife so that they can reach the goal. Something else? Yeah, I thank you. Well, happiness in relationships until one is purified has its selfishness. But that doesn't mean abandon the relationships. It means invest more in the selfless and pray to Krishna that the selfish side diminishes. That's what Queen Kunti does in her prayers. That the material affection, the material attachment portion of this relationship fall away, leaving just the selfless and loving portion of this relationship. Imitation is bad news. He was able to speak the way that he was able to speak because of his qualification and the relationship. Dhritarashtra had full trust in Vidura. He knew Vidura is my well-wisher and Vidura is very wise. There was no uncertainty. When this same little section is discussed in the third canto, when Vidura is offering, he's invited by Dhritarashtra to come and give him advice. There's a short purport where it said that Vidura was respected like Chanakya Pandit was respected in the court of the king. It was known he's the best, and any advice he gives us, we got to listen up. So he was able to speak so directly because of that relationship. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Or are they silk?